the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
How long did you live in Hawaii, Catherine?
I've lived there twice. So the first time we were there for nearly 3 years, and then we moved back there for 9 months. And then my publicist did such an amazing job of getting me on every major TV network across the US, and I was traveling back and forward and I got exhausted. And I realized that in actual fact, Hawaii couldn't sustain my business. That I'd be doing a lot of traveling.
With yourself, big wiggly. I'm proud of you. There just wasn't enough capacity. I get you.
No. So I still have my house back there. I have a beautiful home in Honolulu, and I'll get back there one day. I've got the next 6 to 7 years that I want to be here on the mainland, and then I'll probably head back.
Well, great. Well, I want to welcome you here on the Edge with me and my brains. Okay. Our guest today is a world-renowned confidence coach and best-selling author. Her name is Catherine Orford, and she, are you originally from the UK?
No, Australia.
Australia.
Sydney.
Australia. I've been to Sydney too. And Sydney is beautiful. It's almost like San Diego. I mean, you know, it's.
Yeah. It's I think Sydney, San Diego, and San Francisco have a similar feel. We have a warmer climate like San Diego, but yeah, it's a beautiful city.
It is beautiful. And you are beautiful too. You work with high performance athletes. You teach them goal setting and how to be motivated and how to stay in the game. But you're also working with individuals to do the same thing. So we are going to talk to her about that and a whole host of other things, Brains, here on the Edge. She is exhilarating, and I am so glad to have her here on the Edge with us. Welcome our guest today, Catherine Orford.
Oh, thank you, April. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, this is going to be wonderful. I love to talk to women that are moving and shaking. Tell us a little bit about your journey and your history and what got you into the work that you do.
I think it all started by being brought up by a father that was, he was an elite athlete. He was an Australian cycling sprint champion. So being brought up by a father that has reached that level, for example, taught me never to give up. Because give up was not a part of his vocabulary at all. And then I discovered dance at the age of 13. I took jazz ballet as a sport at school and I fell in love with it. And at 16, I decided, and I was doing like jazz and tap classes. And at 16, I saw this amazing African-American dance troupe that came to Australia called Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope. And they were triple threats. They could sing, dance, and act. And we all went to see this performance and I went, that's what I want to do. And so I knew that I needed to take ballet. I went off and I knew I needed to actually step out of my little pond where I was a big star and go into the city and take ballet classes. But unfortunately, I'm 5'11" and by then I would have been at least at 16, maybe 5'9" or 5'10". And picture this. Of course, being a total beginner at ballet, they put me in with the 8-year-olds. And it was all in French and I had no idea what they were saying, but I thought I'd done well and I'm doing all these movements. And I said to the woman, so can I join an older class now? And she started at my head and she worked her way down and she said, well, let's face it, darling, you're too old, you're too tall, you've got turned in hips, you've got flat feet, you might as well forget it.
And
I went, what does she mean, forget it? I know I've got a dancer inside. I don't want to be a ballerina, but I know I need my ballet in order to become a professional commercial dancer.
Right, you need to have a foundation.
Of course, I sobbed all the way home. And of course, mom and dad said, darling, you know, you just haven't found the right school. Mm-hmm. Okay, the never give up thing. So I went out to another two really big schools in the city and I got told the same thing. So I did give up on my dream, but I still taught for my teacher, little kids. And I took classes for my own enjoyment, fell in love with a lovely English guy that was out in Australia on a working holiday, followed him to England. That didn't work, but I found this school that I just went to do a casual class. And she said, you should audition for full time. And I went, oh, no, no, I'm not good enough. I'm too old. I'm too tall. You know, all the things I've been told over and over.
Regurgitating the nonsense.
And Una Billings, the head of the school, says to me, darling, she said, look at your body and your height. You got everything going for you. We just need to work on your ballet. And so we did. And of course, at 21, I turned professional and I proved my critics wrong.
And so you have springboarded and you've took all of the negativity that people tried to pour into you that did not work. And now you're pouring that into high performance athletes. How did you get involved in that?
I had a very successful school of performing arts. After turning professional, I then went and danced all over Europe. Then I went back to Australia, opened a school and was really successful at that. And I started getting involved as a professional trainer and doing lots of personal development and professional development, implementing that into my methodology of how I taught dance and seeing miracles occur. Wow. And there were people that could dance rings around me, to be perfectly honest, April, but they didn't know how to teach and empower.
Right.
And so we were winning regional and state and national competitions. Fast forward to my early 40s, and I was determined to be a mum, and I ended up becoming a mum and adopting my daughter from Ethiopia. But in the point of that story is that I'd waited so long to be a mum. I didn't want to be an absent mum. Right. And I had achieved everything I wanted to achieve in the actual performing arts area. And so I trained to be a life coach. And they said, well, what is it you want to specialize in? And I thought, what are the two things I know really well? Athletics and performing arts. Because I was actually, coming from a family that I did, it was really interesting. Mum sang and taught ballroom. My dad was this cycling champion. I used to make it to state level for track and field and numerous different sports and dance. So I went, okay, I want to specialize in empowering athletes and performers because I know the psyche and I know what we battle with. And so I did, and I came up with a strategy that I've worked with, swimmers, dancers, full-time ballet students, opera singers, basketball teams, individual people, tennis players, you name it. And really all of the skills that I work with them also applies to the average person, because going back slightly in my early 30s, I thought I had met the man of my dreams. To say he was my biggest nightmare would be the grossest understatement. Long story short, triple timed me, dumped me, married one of the other women within 3 months. There they were in my face. We were in the same personal development groups and went to Hawaii to business school for entrepreneurs with Robert Kiyosaki. And there's the happily married couple in my face. Soldiered on.
Better than me, girl. I would have walked over there. No, I wouldn't have scratched her eyes out. Because you know what? He wasn't for you.
He wasn't for me, but I just wanted to still be in his circle of influence because I thought he was sprinkled with fairy dust because he'd been the chosen one for Robert Kiyosaki to actually train as a facilitator. And I was in their study groups for 6 months in a course and I just soldiered on and I put my superwoman cape on. And of course, I couldn't sustain that. And I didn't know that I was adopted at the time. I just knew that when he dumped me and went on to marry her within 3 months of dumping me, that it was like I'd been on this beautiful magic carpet ride, April. You know, like my kids were doing amazingly in competitions, my business was building, and then it's like he pulled the rug out from underneath me, and I pretended I was okay, but inside I was not, and I just fell into 1,000 pieces. I had deep, dark depression. I was having anxiety attacks, couldn't get out of bed. Finally decided that if I turned on music and I felt numb, that it wasn't worth living. So I was ready to take my own life. Thankfully, I didn't, because I'm here. Right. And when I chose life, two of my beautiful students' mums were there for me in my darkest hour. And I got to tell you, when I was on the cold tiles in my bathroom floor, in a fetal position, rocking myself, my inner critic was having a field day, chastising me and saying, you are so pathetic. You can't even organize your own suicide properly. And the phone rang. I let it ring out. The phone rang again. I let it ring out. The third time I got up and answered, it was one of my beautiful students' mums. She said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, but I will be." And she read right through it. And she said, "I'll be there in 20 minutes. I want you to promise not to do anything." I promised. I put down the phone and I thought, oh boy, got to come up with plan B and get out of here. I was going to drive my car off a cliff.
Oh, geez.
Well, I wasn't brave enough to jump off this place that people jumped. And I thought, I hope I don't become a paraplegic and stuff this up as well.
Right.
So I get all my things. I go back to get my driver's license so they can identify the body. I'm bustling down my corridor 5 minutes after I've gotten off the phone, April, and the friggin' doorbell rang. And I'm going, it can't be her yet. She said 20 minutes, like, you know. And I open the door and there's another beautiful mother there from one of the students' parents. And she had the most exquisite big bunch of flowers I've ever seen. And she said, "Catherine, we know you're going through a really hard time at the moment. And we want you to know how much we love you."
Wow.
And I went, oh. And I went, wow. First tap on the shoulder, Lynn calling. Mm. Second tap is a thud. These people love me. He doesn't love me.
Right.
But all these other people do. And maybe it's time I learn to love myself.
Absolutely.
From the inside out, instead of constantly searching for acknowledgement from everyone else in my world that I was good enough, clever enough, could produce these amazing results. And that's when the real work began. And that's when I learned to reprogram my inner critic and turn it into a cheer squad. And I can't tell you how transformational just that one skill has been.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure. So now the athletes that you work with, they run into challenges all the time. They always want to be the winner. You know, number two is sloppy seconds. You want to be in the winner circle. And, you know, I watched I was talking to my husband about this. We were watching the football game and I always see the coach in there. And, you know, to me, I'm like, you know, this is kind of like testosterone, you know, rah, rah. But he goes, "No, baby, you got to get into the psyche. You really got to get into the mind of the people and let them know that they are invincible and that they are going to win and already see the outcome." What are some of the skills that you pour into the athletes that you work with to succeed?
First of all, we have to clean out what I call the crap, the garbage. You know, mine was too old, too tall, you never make it stuff. You see, all of the thousands of people I've coached over the years, over the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, really, we will either never achieve a goal because we don't believe on a deep cellular level we deserve it, or we'll allow ourselves to have a certain level of success, but then there's this invisible ceiling. So often people will allow themselves a certain level of success as an athlete. But then if some coach has told them, you know, like I got told, oh, you know, you're never going to be the opening five in the basketball or whatever it might be, then if they take that on board, then that's going to stop them from doing something. So first of all, we clean out all of the nonsense and then we start to actually work out how they best visualize, because it's all well and good for a coach. The coaches don't understand this, I don't think. And that's what I get excited about working with coaches as well, is we all visualize differently. A visual person, sure, they're going to be able to visualize, say it's with my basketball teams I coach, they're going to visualize getting that free throw. But an auditory person is going to need to actually hear the ball as it bounces, and they're going to hear the swish as it goes through clean. The kinesthetic person has to feel what it feels like to actually let go of the ball and see it going in, and what it feels like to look up and see that they scored their 2 points or their 3 points. So I work with them on absolutely cleaning out all of the nonsense. And in NLP, we call them negative anchors. So we collapse all of their negative anchors and beliefs. Then we start stacking positive ones in their preferred learning style. They write a script for exactly how they want an event to go. They read it first thing in the morning and last thing at night, because that's when the unconscious mind is just open a little bit.
Right.
And you write it in the past tense as if it's already happened, because our brain doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's not.
Right.
And then I actually anchor them into a piece of music, which is their circle of excellence, and they listen to that just before they go on. And if I'm working with a team, often when I've had teams back in Australia I've worked with that were like coming fifth, halfway through the season, and they've had me come in and work with them, and then the coach would get me on speakerphone after they'd done the warm-up, and I would get them in the zone, and even if they needed me at halftime, they would read me, you know, put me on speakerphone again, I'd rev them up. That particular team, for example, were losing every game after two sessions, which really I prefer four, but after two sessions and then these calls with me when they were on the court, they won the whole state championship.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it's super exciting to see. I love working with people that have a skill set when it comes to athletes and performers anyway. General public is different, but with athletes and performers, if they have the skill set, I really work on the mindset.
Right.
And as these coaches back in Australia have said to me, that one was a dual Olympian that represented Australia twice for basketball. He said, Catherine, what you do versus what a sports psychologist does, he said, they're like kindergarten. You just take it to a whole nother level because they don't look at the whole self-worth piece.
Right. Absolutely. And the challenge. A lot of times people don't feel that they're worthy of the success. You know, or they're afraid of the success.
Exactly.
And that happens to people. I mean, it happened to me. I was on a great weight loss journey. I looked in the mirror one day and I was like two sizes smaller. And I said, well, who is this person in the mirror? And I was like, it can't be April Mahoney. Not with that ego. You know who you are. Okay. You've done the work, but it is still a mind shift. It's a lot of change. So yeah. You have a beautiful daughter that you adopted. I want to talk to you a little bit about that experience and being a mother. What did that do for you? Now, that was after, of course, your challenges with Mr.
Do you know what, though, April? I just want to say, in my experience, our biggest nightmares are our biggest gift in disguise.
Oh, yes.
It doesn't feel like it at the time. Oh, my God. It didn't feel like it when I was, you know, in that dark place. But if I look back in hindsight, that set me off on a whole different trajectory of my life. So just to really, for your listeners, to really understand that, you know, when something comes up in their life that's really challenging, it's there to teach us a lesson we need to learn.
I tell my daughter that all the time. You know, brains, take heed to that. The things that hurt you the most are truly your best teachers.
Yeah.
They really are. They set your boundaries. They set your bandwidth. They let you allow you to feel comfortable with saying no. You know, it's only two letters, N-O. Don't be afraid of that. If it doesn't work for you, if it's not a good fit, if you see the signs and symptoms that it's not making you feel good and worthy and loved, pump your brakes. But that daughter of yours accelerated you. So tell us a little bit about the adoption and how she came into your life and just really, because she's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, look, I was determined to be a mom. That event occurred, you know, the man of the dreams into the nightmare thing in my early 30s. I didn't know I was adopted. I found out that at 43. But around 40, I'm going, oh my God, I've always wanted to be a mom. Like, you know, I was married and divorced very young. And then I met the guy that turned out to be my biggest gift. And then I'm going, oh my God, I really need to be a mom. But, you know, when you have that as your identity, dating guys, you know, that can be like, you know, they run in the opposite direction. And so I actually went, well, good enough for the movie stars, good enough for me. And so I actually went to a clinic and I was choosing a sperm donor off a piece of paper. And that didn't feel really that great for me, but I gave it a couple of goes. By this stage, I was 42.
So you were having in vitro to conceive from a sperm bank?
Sperm, exactly. My eggs were still okay. They did all the tests. But ultimately, I around that same time, I'm finding out I'm adopted. My mother's in a nursing home dying. It wasn't really the ideal time to be conceiving. And then they wanted to pump me full of all these drugs. And I went, how much of my ego is connected to having to create a biological child?
Okay.
Or do I just want to be a mother?
Right.
And so I went, I just want to be a mum. And a dear friend of mine that I used to walk my dog with, Ondine, said, you know, you can adopt as a single mum, international adoption. I went, no, I didn't know that. And so that's how the process started. And 2 weeks short of 3 years into that process, I was approved in a year, but then you have to wait for your files to go over, etc. And then I went over and got my beautiful girl, and I woke up with her on my 48th birthday.
What a gift. What a gift. And now she is off to college. And did you tell me that she's also dancing?
She's already, she just went off to London. Her passion is fashion.
Oh,
and so she's already trained as a color consultant. She's also trained as a stylist. And then she went to London and studied all the business side of fashion, the marketing, merchandising, event management, PR, all that sort of thing. And she's about to start her own Instagram and YouTube on how to really dress to suit your body type and also to dress with self-worth, because a lot of young girls are not doing that these days.
You think? Yeah. I was just talking to some young ladies over at the university, and I wasn't trying to be judgmental. I really wasn't, but I'm saying, you know what? If you show less of your booty, a little bit more of your thigh, men won't, you know, approach you and say such seedy things. Now, just because you're dressed a certain way, that doesn't give them, you know, access to talk to you disrespectfully. But then there's a certain level of self-respect and, you know, some things that we should hold back and not just kind of toss out there. That's just my opinion, brains. So what do you tell, because you've had experience with love, what do you tell your daughter? What do you pour into her about finding a quality relationship as well as incorporating her own goals in the perfect recipe for success?
I have really instilled in her this self-love piece, because what I learned is if we need someone outside of ourselves to tell us we're good enough, now, not to be, not that we don't need people that believe in it, we do. And that's why I love, for example, my 31-day affirmation challenge, where I hold people's hands and we go through reprogramming all of their self-talk and all that sort of thing. And the same with my New Year, New You program. I needed that ballet instructor back in Fernand Monet, back in London, to believe in me. But when that gentleman dumped me, I felt like I wasn't good enough because I needed him to tell me I was good enough. So I've really instilled in her that your self-love and your self-worth, developing that, is the most important life skill you're going to have in life, because when you've got that, no one can take it away.
Mm-hmm.
So, and do what, and I just say to her, do what you love and the rest will sort itself out. And she has met a absolutely fabulous guy here who's very aligned with her, that has a real social conscience, which is what she has as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, that's been the way that I brought her up, is obviously to have clear boundaries, that it all starts with self and how to, you know, reprogram that inner critic and turn it into a cheer squad, and to look for great mentors. I've had amazing mentors in my life.
But you've used a word repeatedly, and I just kind of want to, you know, because I'm into neuro-linguistic programming as well.
Yeah.
You used the word, he dumped me, he dumped me, he dumped me. He didn't dump you, okay? You were not his to dump. He exited himself. He showed his true colors. He shows who he was. So, you know, when people, they have to be careful with the words that they use, because, again, that sets up a paradigm.
Oh, absolutely.
It sets up a block. And, I mean, I know that you're beyond that point, but I'm just saying that for, you know, my brains that are listening that are stuck in space, is that, it's how you talk to yourself, and it's what you hear in your head and in your ear. You can change that. He left. He found someone else. He moved in a different direction.
He showed his true colors. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So you, but, you can know, actually change something different.
Yeah. And you know, that's how I felt at the time.
Right, right.
Not how I feel now. You know, he really was a gift. And I allowed him. You know, I think the very important point that you're bringing up is not to fall into victim mode either.
Right.
You know what I mean? I allowed this to happen. I confronted him and said, what exactly is the nature of the relationship with this person? Oh, it's purely professional. I got a twist in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And I ignored it. Several times I approached him about, say what? You know, you're getting up at 6 a.m. to have a voice lesson? Who has a voice lesson at 6 a.m. in the morning? Oh, yeah, that's the only time she's got... And again, I get the twist in the gut. And as women in particular, we are really good at that intuition, right? I ignored it because I loved him. So exactly. I take full responsibility. he was showing me, and I didn't want to leave him because I was in love with him.
No, and we don't, you know, a lot of times we don't want to listen to it. But Brains, you better turn up your volume. I want you to turn up your volume. Tell us a little bit about your programs. You have a 31-day challenge, and then you have another program that you are releasing in January. Tell my Brains about those.
Yeah, so I'm so excited about these things. We've had lots of people come through the 31-day Become Your Number One Fan Affirmation Challenge, because the stories we tell ourselves and believe are what's driving our life. You know, right. It's like the emotional GPS, like as Oprah calls it. You know, if we put in there that, you know, oh God, it's Monday, you know, I got to get out of bed and go to a job that I don't like, that's the sort of day you're going to have. So the 31-day challenge is, there's about 30 minutes worth of content to teach people, first of all, how to reprogram their inner critic. And that's a really fun thing to do. And then every day they get a video from me. So that's a 25-minute video that sets the foundation. Then each day they actually get an email that has a poster for the day with the affirmation for the day, and I chat a little bit about it. And then we go on that journey for 31 days. There's a private Facebook group where I suggest that they find a picture of themselves as a tiny baby, post that and show us, because you know what? The way we treat ourselves, we would not treat a tiny baby.
Right.
And
right.
Yet that tiny baby still lives inside our adult bodies. And that tiny baby knew that they were clever enough, pretty enough, good enough. So that 31-day affirmation challenge people have done, and the feedback that I've gotten from it is extraordinary. And they can get that for free by going to my website, and we can post a link. And on the homepage of my website, if you scroll down to the bottom, you can actually sign up and get that 31-day affirmation challenge as my gift to your listeners. Oh, and viewers. And then the other thing I have found is we will never ever achieve a goal. You know, so many people, especially at the beginning of the year, get all excited and revved up about new resolutions. Well, right. You know, it's an outrageously small percentage of people that achieve those resolutions, especially if it's something you haven't achieved before. And so I designed this program because we will either never achieve it, or we'll achieve it and sabotage it, like you were talking about when you looked in the mirror. It's like the moment we say to ourselves, for example, this is too good to be true. Like that's our unconscious going, you don't deserve it. So the New Year, New You program is a 12-week program where I am going to literally coach maximum of 20 people in Zoom calls, Facebook Lives, as well as on Thinkific. We have modules to download and fill in. And we're going to get really clear on what is that huge, audacious goal, or it might be a small one that they've been putting on the back burner. They've tried it before, or they've never tried it. And we are going to clean out all the nonsense that's getting them in the way of doing it. If they've tried it in the past, we're going to identify what went wrong. Usually we will spend our time, and the reason why most people don't achieve their goals, by the way, especially if it's something new, we unconsciously work out how we're going to spend our time, who we're going to spend our time with, and what we're going to do with our time based on our highest values. So if someone wants to, for example, shed weight, I never ever use the word lose, by the way,
right?
Because losing has a negative connotation.
Right.
So I lost weight. Well, whoa, you better go back and find it. Okay, which I might know. Have happened.
I changed my vernacular too. I don't call it a diet. I call it a live it.
Exactly. I'm on my live it. And what's the first three words of diet? Die. Who wants right. to do that? So right. So shed the weight, release the weight, whatever. So we work out, okay, so if you want to shed the weight, and health and fitness might be your number 10 or 12 or 20, number 20 on your goals and your hierarchy, sorry, on your values hierarchy,
right.
That's going to need to shift up to a much higher value. And so we work on people's values hierarchies because that's the only way that they're right. going to achieve that goal, as well as reprogramming the inner critic, as well as coming up with a strategy for when they go off track, because it's going to happen. So many people that I talk to think that you set a goal and it's a linear process to get it. Mm-mm. It's not. it does this, there's twists and turns. So when we, you know, say you set a goal to shed weight and you have to go to a wedding or a function and they are serving cake and they're serving, I don't know, fried chicken or whatever.
Right.
You know, you've got to, and you know, you go, okay, well, I'm going to do it. It's okay to do that, but not beat yourself up about it and to get back on again. And so coming up with a strategy for if I go off track, this is how I get back on track. We'll have accountability buddies within the group. They'll have access to me 24/7 on Facebook. And it, within the 12 weeks, they may have a huge, big, bodacious goal that they want to stay and do part two of, or they may well have achieved that goal. A lot of people that work with me do.
Well, I'm sure that they do. Show us a copy of your book.
There we go. It's called, oh, there's a little bit of light on it. It's It's called Become Your Number One Fan. Because how often are we not our number one fan?
I know. We are not our own cheerleaders. And they can purchase that on Amazon?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's on Audible as a Audible book as well.
Wow.
And it's also on my website. So you can actually get the Audible directly from my website if they wanted to.
I love Audibles. They're like podcasts. They're downloadable. Well, I am so glad that you uploaded and poured into us such valuable information. You were so vulnerable and raw, and you shared so many of your true emotions with us. And that's going to help a lot of people, Catherine. It's going to help a lot of people to be their inner cheerleader, to be their biggest fan. I want you to go and sign up for the 31-day challenge, Brains. Okay.
Yeah. Because honestly, if they do that and do that in the next 31 days, that's going to put them in an amazing space to then go on and do the new year, new you, because they'll have already started telling themselves a brand new story about what they're capable of doing and achieving.
And you have to create your own story. Catherine, thank you so much. Again, we are going to put the links to your website, to your book, to your entire planet here on The Edge, down on Facebook. I want you to follow us on Twitter. Share this with your friends because this information is valuable. You know, people come on our show to not just for therapy for them, but for a camaraderie, for a community, to know that you're not alone. There are options, there are processes, and people have been through them. And I'm so glad that your neighbor knocked on the door with those roses and flowers, because if she didn't, you wouldn't be here with us. And I want to thank you so much. Thank you so much, Catherine Orford. Please come back. Keep us informed on what you're doing, traveling around the world, you know, your teams, all that good stuff. We like to follow up with our guests here on The Edge, okay?
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Brains, again, do all that you can do to be the best person that you can be, because I'm counting on you. Okay? Have an amazing day. Bye.